You are listening to Hillary Topper On Air, the small business podcast to help you grow both personally and professionally. And now, here's your host, Hillary Topper.
How has extreme weather events related to climate change affected triathlon and other endurance races? I'm Hillary Topper, and this is Hillary Topper On Air, the Endurance Sports Edition. Today, we have a thought-provoking episode that combines our passion for endurance sports with a pressing global issue. Joining me today is retired healthcare professional, environmental economics enthusiast, and amateur triathlete, Michael Pitzer. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, Hillary. Thank you for having me here and for having a forum for us to get our ideas out to a nice audience of people.
So could you introduce yourself and share your professional and personal background with us?
The way I started out in college back in the 1970s, I thought that economics and science went hand in hand when it came to things like environmental issues that were going on. Rachel Carson's Silent Spring was a big deal in the ecology club. So all of this was of interest to me, but I always felt that if the economics didn't work out, you couldn't really get anything going in the right direction. It all comes down to money often. And there was no future back in the 1970s in this field. So I went into healthcare. I retired. I always kept the passion for this subject always at the ready. And since I retired, I became a volunteer at rewiringamerica.org and also driveelectriclongisland.org. And I've looked for things that I personally can do to move the needle in the right direction personally, and then to see if I could tell my story to other people to give them some insight to what you can and can't do to attack a problem as big as climate change, which is just global, and it seems daunting.
How has extreme weather events related to climate change affected races worldwide? And what are some examples of the challenges organizers and athletes face in these conditions?
Well, I very quickly looked up, Googled events that were affected by climate change, and you get a list that is a mile long after a while. New York City, right over here, the New York City Triathlon canceled, shortened due to heat. Runner's Edge, we had the Tobe race 1 year canceled because of a hurricane locally. California, a lot of the wildfire smoke has knocked races off. 2022 California Triathlon was canceled. Low water levels, the race director himself cited climate change and global warming as a reason why the water levels were so low. We had the Olympics in 2020 with the extreme heat. Christian Blumenfeld, the winner of the triathlon, basically was vomiting and they had to take him off on a stretcher at the end in the heat. Ironman Maryland, Ironman North Carolina, North Carolina 70.3, Florida, all of these local, not local races, national races really felt the impact either in shortened courses, cancellations, postponements. So it's affecting the sport, and it affects even the cost of the sport because the race directors have to plan all these contingencies and cancellations. It drives up the cost for us as participants as well. The other issue is just training under conditions like we had wildfire smoke the other day in New York from the wildfires happening in a different part of the world that you can't really go out and train. So it affects our health, the risk to our lungs, to our cardiovascular, heat stroke. So it does affect everything that we want to do to be able to compete in triathlons.
You know, what's really funny is that I saw on Facebook, even though the wildfires were impacting us and everything was orange here, almost looked like Mars. I noticed that people were still training, and a couple of older men at the aquatic center were talking about how they're not going to wear a mask no matter what. Could you talk a little bit about the impact that training in such conditions could do to our body?
I'm aware that it affects your cardiovascular system when you're stressing it with the heat. And I think with the wildfires, a real extreme difference compared to our usual particulate matter from just generally burning fossil fuels is the size of the particles are so much tinier that they get deeper into your lungs.
It's terrible. I mean, and I would assume that
wildfire smoke.
Yeah. I'm sorry to cut you off. I would assume that people, triathletes and endurance athletes in California, are dealing with this on a daily basis.
And the fact that we're first seeing it now makes it real for us. These guys have already experienced it. They know how to act with it. Unfortunately, we usually as a species only react when the floodwaters are coming to our doorstep. And when we read about it somewhere else, it kind of still feels different and remote, and it's not our issue. And that's a fault of our species, I guess. And now we got to see it firsthand last week. And just as an aside, you know, we pitched this to you. We were talking about doing the podcast on this a couple of months ago, I guess, 6 weeks ago, whatever. But the immediacy of that event that day with the orange sky said, I've got to hit Hillary back up. Because it's right here, it's right now, it's so timely.
And it could happen again, and it could continuously happen. So we need to be prepared, right?
In summer going forward, the risk is not really abated because the wildfires in Ontario and Quebec and Nova Scotia are still raging up in that part of the country. It all depends how the winds shift to us. And you and I know we've got a big event in Long Island coming up in September. The Ironman 70.3 Jones Beach. And I've spoken with the race director with Corey, who's a great inspiration and resource on all things triathlon and climate. And it's of course a consideration what those wildfire smokes will do. He was just up in Western Massachusetts for the 70.3 Western Mass race. They were shut down for 2 days in preparing for it because of the wildfire. So it's right there. And it's no doubt that it's an unpredictable way to derail our plans, our races, and your health if you go out and you try and train in this stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's been a wake-up call for all of us. And I think that it also has these race directors thinking, okay, maybe we need to do something, have some kind of alternative plans or you know.
God forbid triathlon ever has to become an indoor sport where we're swifting and we're in a pool, because the whole beauty of triathlon is the venues that we race in. That's the whole treat. Yeah. I did Tremblant the first year was out, 2012, and it's a beautiful area. The athletes have that race coming up in about a week and a half, and I'm sure there's a lot of uncertainty because I'm on the Facebook chat about that, and everybody is asking, how's the year? It's going to be okay. So you go in, train, you make the investment, and to have all of this going on is a problem. The biggest issue, I think, going forward is people taking action, usually only when things are at their doorstep. So our immediate threat passed, but use this as a window to say, what can we do? You know, what's this all about? What can we as individuals step into? What kind of role to try and move the needle in the right direction? So.
Now, you talked a little earlier about fossil fuel, and I also read when these wildfires were happening here in New York that that's something that we need to make changes on. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think basically to understand the easy part of climate change, very simply put, is burning fossil fuels gives off carbon dioxide, methane, other gases. Those gases go up into the atmosphere and they trap the heat below. You could almost think of it from a triathlon analogy. It's your wetsuit that holds that heat in when you go in the water. So we're all familiar with wetsuits, being comfortable in cold water. The CO2 really has the same effect. And as we get more CO2 pumped up from burning more fossil fuels, the heat just planetary increase is why the extreme weather starts to occur. You know, that's it's all about the CO2 trapping the heat ultimately. And I think there's a difference that people should understand between weather and climate. Weather is more your mood that day. Is it rainy? Is it sunny? Climate is more your personality. If you're a grump, you're a grump. And you know, you can't get hung up on the idea, I had a bad race because it was a rainy day. It's more about the climate is the grump. And affecting climate is really the issue. How do we stop burning fossil fuels? What do we do?
Yeah, it's really dangerous, especially to people who have asthma or, you know, any kind of lung type of issue.
The health costs are probably total into the billions of dollars just from all of the fossil fuel burning particulates that are in the air. It's there's a cost to that I think it's immeasurable. I think as a good anecdote, when we had COVID and people weren't driving to work, we had some of the best air quality days in New York that we've ever had just by taking the cars off the road. So, you know, that quick, you could see a change in the air quality.
You know, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, fossil fuels. I don't know that we could stop this from happening. I mean, it's been happening. So what do you do at this point? I mean, how do you make changes?
I will give you the very simple path forward that greater minds than mine have figured out, people who are expert in the field. The organization RewiringAmerica.org has got a lot of smart scientists and economists. So I fell into their website and I did a lot of reading on it. And they broke it down into manageable parts because the idea of us individuals tackling anything related to climate change seems totally ludicrous. What can one individual do? Ends up, we can do, because it's almost like doing a triathlon. You break it down into segments. And you get through the swim one buoy at a time. You get through the run 1 mile at a time. You get through the bike one hill at a time. So it comes down to 90% of emissions come from energy production and usage. How we produce our electric and how we put the fuels to power our machines into the machines themselves and what they give off. So from the other 10% are cows. And we can't electrify cows with methane, so that's out. But of the 90%, 42% of the emissions are from the tools that we use in our homes, how we heat our homes, how we wash our clothes, how we drive our cars. So that 42% is really in play for us. And that is a big chunk of the problem right there that is within our grasp to do something about. And it comes down, I don't know how many households there are in the United States, but you get a period where your machines at one point hit the end of their life cycle. Your oil burner is now 20 years old, 25 years old. The repairman's come a million times. It's time to make a change. So now the idea is to replace that fossil fuel burning appliance with a modern heat pump, to heat your water with a hybrid hot water heat pump. Your car is now 19 years old. It's been to the mechanic, the transmission's leaking. Now is the time before you lock in another 20 years with another gas car to look at what's out there with the electric cars. Same thing with your lawnmower. You know, it goes down the road. There was a very funny ad that I think really changes the mind frame of the way we look at our tools in the house. Nissan Leaf, which I was an original owner of, which, great little electric car, was my gateway drug into electric cars. And it hooked me, okay? But they had a commercial that said, what if everything ran on gas? And the video basically shows your coffee pot pouring in a little gasoline spigot to power your coffee pot or your alarm clock or your laptop computer. And you're pouring in gas into it and the fumes are coming in. What would it be like if everything we used ran on gas? So you look at the alternative. How many of those appliances, what if they ran on gas, already do run on electric? You can't think of your coffee pot or your alarm clock doing anything but running on electric. So the natural extension is, why not our cars? Why not our heating? Why not our stove? Why not our laundry machine? Why not our lawnmowers? And that is the thrust of what rewiringamerica.org is promoting. And that in itself, over a 20, 25 year period, is a matter of replacing about 1 billion machines, which is daunting and a lot, but it comes not with changing your lifestyle and not with interrupting things in your life, because you're going to need heat, you're going to need a car, you're going to need a washing machine. It's just now getting involved in using something that doesn't burn gasoline, that uses pure electric to run it. And that's the part that is within our control. We can't control the way they're building industries and what they're doing in China. You know, that part of it is out of our reach, but we can do the stuff that we can do. Control what you can control is our mantra when we're racing. And it's kind of the triathlete motto, to control what you can control. And this is one of the things that we can control going forward. So
great ideas.
Thank you. That's my answer to that. Yeah.
Before we move on, I just want to say that I am so appreciative of our sponsor and must take the time out to thank him. Please support our sponsor and tell them that you heard about them on Hillary Topper on Air. Special thanks to Boldfoot Socks, a family and veteran-owned American-sewn, American-grown sock company. Now back to you, Michael. So from a homeowner's perspective, we talked about, changing over, but it's also financially, it's a little bit of a financial consideration. And you gave examples of these different solar powered or electric cars and that type of thing. I mean, how do you get people to change? I mean, they don't want to spend money. They like what they have. They're happy with what's going on.
The answer. my feeling about all of this is, again, you're not even asking people to go out and do like what I did. I got very aggressive with it because I believe that I'm old, okay? And I can't wait, okay? I don't buy green bananas anymore, okay? So they have basically looked at both ends of this. There's a higher upfront cost for of cars in terms of getting that first investment in solar panels and doing the heat pumps. But that being said, good public policy is helping people bring down that cost on the front end. And there are a lot of people don't know about the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. Okay. There is a calculator that you can put in your zip code, nothing personal information, on that rewiringamerica.org website. And you can see for yourself what tax credits you're going to get for help. Okay. What rebates are going to be coming from New York State through federal funding. If you meet income requirements, there are huge rebates for things like the heat pumps. So the cars, depending on what brand you buy and what model, you can basically get New York State up to $9,500, $7,500 from the federal tax credit and $2,000 from New York State towards the purchase of an electric car. Okay. The other thing, while we're looking at the cost up front being higher, which public policy is trying to address to make it more affordable, you have to also add in the operating cost. So your long-term cost will be lower and you will end up saving money by electrifying. For example, the gateway drug is solar panels, okay? Once you're powering your house with solar panels, driving your electric car costs pennies, okay, to drive it. I did the calculations. I don't have a big roof. I've got a small house, but I'm spending the equivalent of getting about 200 plus miles per gallon equivalent for gas. Yes. So it's a huge savings as far as the operating costs go. So when you add everything together, you're not spending the money. Also, there's financing available to help these things get furthered. So between the incentives and the financing, my brother did solar and they worked it out that he was paying the same thing for his financing and solar as if he were just doing the electric bill without financing. So he'll own the system, and he's paying the same amount as he would if he didn't have the solar panels up there. The other interesting thing I will throw in, I got an email today from Corey Roberts over at, he wears many hats. He's a race director. He's also very important at Empower Solar. To give him a plug, he's offering an amazing thing. If you go online for an evaluation of your house and you schedule that with him, you'll get free race entry to any Race Awesome race. That just came over today. So he's working as part of the community to help further this interest. We talk about this stuff, and I think that's, he can sell out the race without that, but I think that's a way forward. But the financial thing, you have to look at the total cost as the bottom line, and the help that you will get on that initial cost is there through public policy. And
so let's bring it back to the athletes, right?
Like I said, on that.
Let's bring it back to the athletes now. And, you know, how can local athletes initiate a conversation with fellow athletes and community members about the importance of addressing climate change and reducing fossil fuel reliance? And how can these conversations inspire change on a personal and community level?
I think everything comes down to education and knowledge. When I talk to people, just telling them, mentioning the word Inflation Reduction Act, often I just get a stare at me like, what is that? And then when you start to tell them, they're giving you carrots to make changes. So the idea of taking the carrot, needing your carrots at this point is really, really good, as opposed to what may come down the road in terms of getting sticks, getting mandatory things where there are no options, where you're forced to, you know, to go ahead and just do those conversions under duress because maybe the conditions are worse. But I find a forum like yours, this is wonderful because your listeners are going to hear this and they're going to say, I'm curious now. You got my curiosity up because I can save money and I can do something that feels good. And, you know, we're talking about money and financial end of it. That's a big thing. But also, I think we do triathlons because it makes us feel good. It empowers us. It helps us become, you know, something that we weren't before. Your story is a great story. You were a couch potato. Now you're an endurance athlete. And you overcame a lot to do it. And you did it one step at a time. And you tackled the problem. And I think as athletes, we're really good at charting a course and making a plan to get a result that's a beneficial result for us personally. And I think when you chart out the possibilities that we can do in terms of affecting climate change on a personal level, it makes you feel good inside. I kind of liken it to when Moses left Egypt, okay? God sent him out on this journey, okay? He says, you're not going to get to the promised land yourself, but you're going to lead your flock, and some are going to make it, some aren't going to make it. And that's the case with climate change. We're probably not going to see the end game in our lifetime, but we're on that journey, we're on that path, and that's a noble path to go on. And I think that's the end of it. It's got to be the going, not the getting there, that's good, from a Harry Chapin song, Taxi, if you remember that one. Mm-hmm. And it's about the journey, not always the destination. So I think if you go with that mindset, even with triathlon, we go into the sport, everybody has dreams of going to Hawaii to do the Ironman. It's a fantasy. The reality is only a tiny few people are going to get there. But the rest of us are on the journey and we're enjoying that journey and we're bettering ourselves. Even if we do our little local races and nothing more, we've done a big improvement. And I think if you look at it, it's a good thing. That's why I think the athlete mindset, especially triathletes, is perfect to get engaged in stuff like this, because it just makes sense for our health, for our events, and it's something we're good at to tackle this kind of stuff and put a plan in motion. It's just when you break it up in little pieces like we do with races, it's doable. You do one thing at a time when it comes up where you need to make that change. You need the new lawnmower and you need the new car. That's the time to do it. To look at and to look at the incentives that are out there is key. There's a lot of help. So
this has been great, Michael, and I really appreciate you educating you know, the community.
I'm happy to talk to you instead of just my wife, because she's had enough of me talking about this. But
tell people how they can get in touch with you if they want to get involved with any of the organizations that you're involved with, or, have questions about this.
I think rewiringamerica.org is an excellent website to fill you in on that whole idea of machines. Okay, there's some great little videos explaining what they do. And more importantly, they have resources for the financial end of it. Okay, the other organization that I'm involved is driveelectriclongisland.org. We go around, we do EV 101s at libraries. In fact, we'll be in Merrick in August. So I hope to see you there. And we basically try and demystify and show that driving an electric car is not crazy space age stuff. You plug in the car like your phone, and the newer models are just, I could do a whole thing with you just on the EVs alone. Okay, but that's a great resource. The people I work there, Rosemary and Beth, are fantastic. They do the presentation. The owners are there with their cars to show people. I think a lot of show and tell just demystifies all of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got right here, this is not video, I forgot, but I have my prop set up, my lawnmower, so I can't show it to you. And I got my heat pump right outside. But I think those two organizations are great. Empower Solar, I can't say enough about, because their founder, David Sherian is the founder and CEO over there. He's not only committed to just putting solar panels on your roof, but he's into the whole electrification thing. We just had a seminar where he invited PSEG Long Island and the heating experts, Drive Electric. And unfortunately, not enough people show up for these things. It's on Facebook, but people could get such a good education. But his whole mission is, again, about electrifying everything so we don't burn fossil fuels. And he's a fantastic resource over at Empower Solar. Corey, who wears so many hats, he's done amazing things with his own home too. He's done geothermal, he's done the solar panels. Hit him up at any race you see Corey at. And like I said, he's doing the thing now. If you want to get an evaluation for your roof, online consult, and you get a free race entry. How could you beat that? If your conditions are right, you do one step at a time, just like in racing, just like in triathlon. I don't know if you want my email, if anybody has any personal questions they want to ask me. It's very easy. It's the pits, ITSTHEPITZ at AOL.com. I'm old, so I still use AOL. So,
well, thank you so much, Michael, for being on the show. I really appreciate your time. And I also want to thank our sponsors once more, Boldfoot Socks, a family and veteran-owned American-sewn, American-grown sock company. For more information, visit boldfoot.com. I'd also like to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you want more information on this show or any other show, visit our website at hillarytopper.com. Or you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Alexa, Google Play, you name it. We're out there. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.